Hey guys, my name is Sabir Bharti. A very, very warm welcome to another episode of the Sabir Bharti Show, the place where I interview interesting people with interesting perspectives. My guest today is James Tusk, that's spelled JamesTusk. His website, jamestusk.com, on YouTube at James Tusk, and on Twitter as well. At James Tusk. And as always, I'll include all of James's social media links in both the YouTube and the audio podcast descriptions. James Tusk teaches entrepreneurs and professionals how to meet, attract, date, and build relationships with their dream women without a single swipe on a dating app or ever having to set a foot inside of a nightclub. James says that every man should have the confidence to approach women sober in everyday scenarios, whether it be whilst out on a walk, in the mall, the grocery store, wherever you see a woman that you find attractive. James says you must approach them and start a conversation. And I'm pleased to say James Tusk is here to delve into the science behind building the confidence to approach women anywhere. James, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I know that I've tried to evade this for as long as possible. So you managed to finally
Yeah,
pin
no,
me
I'm
down in
super.
my hungover state proverbially strangle the life out of me until I succumb to your podcasting charms. So yeah, it's good to have a chat, and it's always good to talk these things through with people anyway. It helps clarify things in my own head. So good
Yeah,
stuff.
no, absolutely. As you said, and we've been speaking off air for the past few weeks, and I've said to you that you've been on my guest wish list for quite some time. So I am super happy that we managed to arrange this. James, what I love about your work is that you practice what you preach. And there are countless videos on your YouTube channel where you essentially show everyone how to approach women confidently in everyday scenarios. And I want to roll back the years because this wasn't always the case with you. And you've been very open and candid about this in your YouTube videos, where you talk about your experience in your younger years and how you weren't always confident. I was wondering if you could perhaps give us a glimpse into this period of your life and how day game and the principles of day game transformed your approach.
Yeah, so I was, I'm 36 now, but 14, 15, changing to kind of secondary school in London. I was very, very unconfident, very low self-esteem. I went down quite a dark path, from 14, 16, I was smoking like skunk, pretty heavy skunk from Amsterdam every day. And that really set me back socially because I was already quite nervous and anxious going to a kind of a new environment, as you are in those kind of awkward puberty years, or not everyone, but me. And then I kind of almost, me and this other guy, good friends with, we isolated ourselves and just smoking skunk the whole time. So that set me back socially. And it's been a very interesting journey. I mean, I got into this stuff having not really achieved anything with women. I got away with it to a degree, like some men do. Because I was decent looking, I had slept with women, but it was always girls. I wasn't interested in picking me. Whenever I tried to be the chooser, I had no idea what I was doing. I was very much from that school of thought of some guys get this, some guys don't. It's just luck of the draw. But at the same time, I was like, why aren't I getting laid? Because as a good looking guy, I wasn't particularly confident in my looks, but I knew objectively through weight of evidence, people have said, oh, you're quite good looking. And they assume you're banging, right? Women and men. And I was having sex with people, but it wasn't the kind of people I wanted to be having sex with, very much them choosing me. So I remember seeing, I came out of uni, didn't really do much damage there, no real direction in life. 27, saw a company that now doesn't exist. Tom Torero, may he rest in peace if he's not hiding in Medellin. He was approaching on the street, and I was like, what the fuck is this, right? This is when daygame.com was out as a company, had some well heard of people, Yads, John Matrix, Tom Torero, people like that. And I was like, fuck, this is like a superpower. Because I grew up in a British, in London, right, where very much the pub culture, you go to London with your friend, you go in at 15, you go to the pub, with your fake ID and you get hammered, right, for years on end. And you're not really interacting with women as well. Went to private school, had three younger brothers. There's not a great deal of female interaction, full stop, right? And I'm a believer in my experience of seeing guys who have sisters, typically, not always, but typically being overall better with women than guys with brothers. And I think it's just exposure to being around women from a younger age. And typically guys that don't go to private school where it's single sex, again, exposure to women. So there's just not that awkwardness and like that kind of not knowing what to do because you've interacted with women to a large degree. I hadn't done that, right? So combined with low self-esteem and some social anxiety, it's kind of the reverse dynamite of what you want. But yeah, I remember seeing these guys approaching online and I was like, that's amazing. I wanted to cut down the drinking anyway. And lo and behold, as I have a glass of wine, a terrible Brazilian red wine. And it played into this need to face my fear. There was a great podcast I listened to recently, Chris Williamson, who produced some really good content, interviewing Lewis Howes. He's this kind of like motivational kind of, I guess, guru. It was about facing your fears. And they quoted Joseph Campbell, the hero with 1,001 faces, and that whole paradigm of the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. And that was very much the case for me. I was like, right, I'm not where I want to be with dating. What's the most extreme way, really, of facing this? And it was charging headlong into approaching women sober without hiding behind alcohol on the street and telling them they look hot, right? It's terrifying. I remember that first cold approach I did in a boot camp with John and Tom. And it was quite a hot girl walking down Carnaby Street for people that know that in Oxford Circus. And I stopped her. And I'd kind of like, I'd eaten a bacon sandwich about half an hour before I kind of felt it like regurgitating a bit in my mouth. And, you know, I thought the conversation went well because she stopped initially and was like, kind of like quite receptive. And then within 30 seconds, she kind of lost all interest and stormed off. And I looked in the mirror, the shop like window, and I saw I had like bits of sick just like dribbling down here. So it was a horrendous first cold approach, but I was like, things can only get better from this. I completed the training and then went out onto the streets with a wing, very inspirational guy. Not in touch with him anymore, but he was my first wingman. He was legally blind. Like he did the boot camp with me and he's got like a stick, right? Really nice guy, really positive, great vibe. Very inspirational because I was like, if this dude's fucking approaching, and this guy had some hilarious stories, like he approached a couple of men with long hair because his eyesight was so bad, thinking they were like hot girls. And I was like, his not only his wingman, but I was kind of his eyes and his ears at the same time. And then sometimes I must admit, I kind of took the piss a bit. And I sent him into, you know, various creepy crawlies on purpose, just for my own self-amusement. But that's, I guess, that's a story for another time. He was inspirational though, and we went out together. And we pounded the streets for a good 5 months in London, and got competent. And from there, I started getting guys kind of asking for help, and then I started working for a company. Kezia Noble runs a big dating company in London. Very switched on woman. And then I was like, umming and ahhing with the idea, and I just thought, fuck it, I'll create my own gig. And try and bring my own spin to the matter. And that was 6 years ago. And that's kind of the progression of how it's all played out. But what's been interesting recently was about 9 months ago, I was diagnosed. I'd always known that my attention span was fucked and I was always a kind of attracted to shiny object syndrome and stuff. And I was diagnosed with heavy ADD, right? Real lack of attention span. And that's been interesting to kind of bring into the where I'm at with all this stuff anyway, because it explains a lot of the behaviors and a lot of the dysfunctional relationships I had. There was obviously the need to validate myself through banging women. I think that's a path that every man needs to go through because that is the obstacle in the way. And if that's all consuming because you haven't really hooked up with women because you don't know what you're doing or you've got low self-confidence or low self-esteem, I think you do need to go through that path of having loads of meaningless sex to realize actually it doesn't really matter. It's not about the women. But that kind of probably explains why my behavior with validation seeking, with needing to get laid, went on for years and years. Whereas most people go through that cycle within a couple of years. It took me really 10 years from the age of 27 getting into this till now, 36, roughly 10 years to kind of figure that out. So that's been interesting to see how this is going to play into the next chapter of where I want to go with this stuff. I'm absolutely
Sure.
not giving up dating. It's still a part of my life, and obviously helping guys with it is a big part of what I do, and I always try and take the shots. But at the same time, I'm looking at other areas, more of the spiritual fulfillment stuff. I guess David Dado, he'd be a good example of that, where you're working on the introspection and the internal, and really focusing on that as a path to self-actualization as well. But I
Yeah.
think that part can only come once you've actually done some of the dating. So guys will
So,
often try and skip out the dating part, and it doesn't work like that. You have to go through the grind, I'm afraid, of doing the dating stuff.
yeah, no, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And when I started watching you, I think on YouTube, it's been about 2, 3 years. And it's really nice to hear you speak about your transformation because it's certainly come across in your videos, where I think over the last year or so, you've become, I guess, more open to your own personal experiences with dating, relationships, and it gives a real flavor of who you are as a person through this journey that you've been showcasing to everyone on YouTube. And, you know, it comes across really strongly. And I'm sure other people who follow your channel feel the same way as well. So yeah, thanks again for sharing that.
Not at all. Not at all. I think, yeah, with anything, and it will be the same with your podcast if you haven't already, but you start off because you're passionate about an idea, but you don't
Yeah.
necessarily know where the journey is going to take you, but you know the kind of general direction. And then
Sure.
as you go on, you find your voice with stuff, you find your own tin. And maybe you've got this for your podcast already, maybe it's still a work in progress. I mean, I've been doing this for a while now, but I'm definitely not at the point where I'm kind of like, okay, I fully know what I'm doing. But you
Yeah.
kind of pick the direction you want to move in and you start going. And I think procrastination and needing to be a perfectionist actually stops a lot of people from just taking the action they need to do. Because as long as you're taking a few steps forward and maybe there's one step back here, progress is never like linear, you figure it out as you go, right? So I think that'd be the only advice I'd give to guys who are thinking about doing something a bit different, content creation, is just start doing it. You're going to feel like a fool when you start doing it. You're going to get laughed at. People are going to say, what the fuck are you up to? I had a lot of this.
Yeah.
Especially from people close to me, and it's, you know, close family, friends, they're the opinions you hold highest, but they're also most of the time the least qualified to give the advice, right? So it's the crab in the bucket analogy. It scares people if you're doing something different because it reflects on them and their lack of, you know, everyone's scared of change, right? So don't listen to the haters, and it doesn't matter if you haven't got a completely clear plan, better just take some action. And you'll figure it out as you go. And at the end of the day, the great leveling factor for me is always the thought. I love this final chapter of Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene on mortality. I must have listened to it 50 times. And there was one particular moment in that where that really I remember. It was like a dark and stormy night in London, and I was still working the office job. It must have been, you know, 29 or something. But I was toying with the idea of leaving and just fucking off a bit like you're doing, where you're like, should I just leave London? And actually, the only advice I'd give my former self is I should have done that years before. But if I'd known what I know now, having traveled the world and how much I learned and the experience that I had, I would have left London years before I did. But I was in the underground. I think it was coming from Bank to Liverpool Street, very crowded. It was like stormy, wintry weather outside. So everyone's a bit damp and wet, and the carriage is quite steamy and crowded and just horrible, that fluorescent light. And I remember listening to him, and he was saying that basically, the premise is we worry about stuff that just isn't important when you factor death into the equation, right? He said, like, take now, for example, look around wherever you are. And I'm listening to the audio, so I look kind of look around the underground carriage, and I see, he's like, look around wherever you are and realize that in 80, 90 years, every single person in your view, and there's probably about 50 people, including yourself, will just be ashes and dust. It doesn't mean anything, right? So I think something that's really helped me through some of the dark times I've had many, and some of the moments of self-doubt, and I've had many, has been this idea that really we're only here for a short time. So it's not that big a deal. Whatever you think is a big deal, whether you believe in some sort of afterlife or not, you are you only one time, right? And that time will go like that in a heartbeat. I mean, I still feel like 18 and I'm 36. I mean, it's double the age, right? Time goes so fast. Every week you live goes faster and faster. So use that, use this idea of memento mori, and the fact that we don't have forever and we're not immortal as a leveler to do scary things. Well, that's something that's helped me anyway.
Yeah, no, I love the fact that the conversation has gone towards this way. And it's really interesting actually what you said a moment ago, a couple of minutes ago, that the experience of dating on a regular basis, meeting women, sleeping with women, it was part of your journey. I think often when, and you've probably experienced this as well, when someone hears of someone else sleeping with loads of women, it's often seen as a negative thing. But in fact, like you said, sometimes one has to go through that in order to learn certain life experiences and then progress to the next moment, right?
I think a lot of messy marriages and divorce rates would be, and divorce rates in various cities would be lower if men had learned game. Not in a manipulative,
Sure.
kind of cheesy way, but in the way that they've gone out, they've had the variety of sexual experiences that most men need to do to feel satisfied, and they've actually learned how to interact with women. That's a
Right.
two-pronged way of actually stabilizing marriages because you understand how to deal with the woman you're with, and you picked her from a position of abundance, and you've had all the experiences prior to that, which gives you the variety of sexual experiences you need as a man to feel fulfilled. And so it's like watertight, right? How can you? Obviously, guys will kind of get sloppy and lazy, but if you've learned a skill set, social skills, because it is learnable to deal with women, and you're picking the girl from a position of extreme abundance, and you've kind of filled your boots with previous experiences, so you don't feel the need to act out because you feel fulfilled in that area. That is literally the strongest position you can enter a marriage from if you want to then build a family. But no one does that. So you
Yeah.
absolutely don't listen to anyone that says, and we get a lot of bullshit marketing in the Anglo sphere now about, sexism and all this stuff. It's fucking bullshit. On an evolutionary level, women strive to find the highest possible, most valuable possible partner they can, hence the rock star effect, hence why you've got, Harry Styles there and you've got thousands of women lining up to bang him. They'd have no idea who he is. It's what he represents. And men are programmed to enjoy variety. You can override your evolutionary programming because we're clever enough. There's a great book called The Ape That Understood the Universe, but we're consciously aware of all this stuff. So you don't have to act on your evolutionary programming. But for most men, in my experience, this fear of loss and negative emotion and fear of loss is a far more prevalent driver of change than positive emotion. Fear of loss and fear of missing out and not having a variety of sexual experiences because they don't know how to do it. And they've never built themselves up as men and increased their sexual market value. It causes so much fucking anxiety for guys, right? It's the cause of guys acting up, banging prostitutes on the side when they've got a perfectly good wife, kids at home, all this stuff. So there's a lot to be answered for with the dating stuff. And again, I can't talk about this sort of stuff on mainstream media because I'll just get shut down. They'll be like, that's so sexist. It's like, no, it's not. It's actually just true, right? But
Yeah.
I don't know. We've gone off on a tangent again. But
No,
that would be
no,
my personal
it's
tips to have a happy marriage or have a successful
Yeah.
marriage without it fucking up, right?
Yeah.
Because the marriage, what divorce rates in the UK, at least 50%, probably higher.
Yeah. No, as I said a few moments ago, I'm actually so glad that the conversation has gone in different tangents because for me, it makes the conversation more interesting when it goes off script slightly, because you're being true to you and the message. And it actually follows on very nicely to what I wanted to ask you next, James. So, as we just mentioned, or as you mentioned, this concept of approaching women in everyday scenarios, as you said, is also better known as day game. And in my experience talking to other people about day game, I think unfortunately sometimes day game gets a bad rep due to the misconception that it's only useful for hookups and one night stands. And while many guys may use it for that, I've heard in many of your videos, certainly your more recent videos in the last few months, that in fact, day games principles are very much suited to men who want to explore any type of relationships, whether it be casual, whether it be looking for a long-term partner. So yeah, I guess I just wanted you to kind of delve into that and just expand on how it can help men who are looking for different things from women. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, the equation you want to bear in mind is social freedom, so the ability to talk to any human being, and then social and emotional intelligence, so the ability to be charming, to read a room, to be empathetic, to understand, and to be a sociable being, right? And to be able to flex your social skills. And that's, again, it's a learned skill, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And look, some guys are going to come in that we work with. The avatar we tend to work with is between late 20s to early 40s, guy that's got his shit together in a variety of areas because the pricing is pretty high, deliberately, right? I want to target people that value time over money, that understand the concept of that. And so that automatically, by pricing my products higher, gets rid of most people, right? Which is what I want.
Yeah.
And but you're going to get some guys coming in that can afford it at 18, 19. Obviously, they just want to bang around. That's fine. You're in your party years as a guy, right? Same with women, like 18, 23-year-old women go to uni, they just want to fuck around, sexual experience. Nothing wrong with that. Men, women, whoever, you know, whatever. And then you're going to get guys who are coming in, maybe early 40s who also want that. You know, they've gone through a 20-year marriage, they feel like they've got to make up for lost time. So we're not here to, we're here to teach them a particular skill set, and like a kitchen, like a knife in the kitchen, you can use it to butter a slice of bread, or you can use it to kill someone, right? It's up to them, up to the client, how they use it. If the client is really coming across, which is, you know, probably 1 in 100 guys we meet, very dark tried, not quite there, clearly a bit of a psycho, we won't teach him. But most guys, if they're clever enough, even if they were like that, they're not going to show us anyway. So you can't catch them all. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with just wanting one night stand hookups. And again, like I said, it's part of the process. You have to go through that, like random meaningless sex, to realize, okay, well, okay, I've done that, been there, done that, tried it, not really what I want. But the majority of guys come in and they might have had the kind of societal brainwashing of they want to be a player and be dating loads of women exclusively. I can tell you from having done it, it's a fucking effort. Most guys aren't cut out for it. And is the juice worth the squeeze with it? I don't know, to be honest. It's again something to experience, but most guys come in, they want to learn the skill set, they want to have a bit of fun, and then eventually they want to actually find a cool girl to have as a girlfriend. That's the reality of what men actually end up doing, as opposed to like the narrative of we're teaching them to be these super seduced and they're banging like women 24/7 and fucking them over. That's not the reality of what happens at all.
That's why I wanted to mention that, because I think sometimes it is that misconception. And as you said, the principles of day game, I think, can be used by anyone. And you know, it's funny, it's something that, and this has come from watching your videos actually. So I used to use dating apps up until very recently. And then after watching a lot of your content, you and your team were probably one of the main reasons that prompted me to start getting away from dating apps and considering cold approaches as a serious thing to do when you're out and about. And it
Right.
actually fits my day-to-day living quite well, because I'm someone who loves going on walks after work. So if I wrap up around 5 in the evening, at the moment in the UK, there's still enough daylight to go out and approach if you want to. And I must admit, as you probably experienced with a lot of your clients, it's bloody hard at the beginning. I found it
Oh, yeah.
so difficult. I probably went out maybe 5, 6 times and didn't do anything.
It's terrifying.
It
It's
is for the
terrifying. And
first time.
I mean, if you can, if you've even got to yourself the stage on your own where you're able to approach, I commend that, because it's not something I could do. I went out and did the standard thing of watching content for a while and then trying to do it, and I just wasn't able to do it. So then at that point, I paid for training, right? Which is what I needed, because I had high levels of social anxiety, and I was just like, I wasn't resistant to the idea. I was like, take my fucking money. I just need someone to do this for me, right? But I've always been an advocate of coaching. I accidentally just kind of, for whatever reason, always bought into the idea of getting a coach. Probably again, ADHD, wanting to save time, because I now have a limited attention span. So it's like, why wouldn't I just pay someone to shortcut the process? You know, I'm quite impatient. So but I mean, commendations to you if you manage to do it. You know, get up to any sort of a level, just self-taught, because I think that's quite impressive.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it was bloody hard. And I remember you saying in one of your videos as well, if you're really struggling in the initial approaches, even going to a coffee shop and imagining yourself doing it helps. And it actually did help. I think on my fourth time I went out, I was psyching myself up. I was like, all right, Sabir, this is the day. Just do it. Just approach one,
Talking to yourself in the third person as well, always good.
regardless.
Come on,
And
Sabir.
yeah, literally. And because it can be so annoying, because in your mind you think it's such an easy thing to do, yet it's so difficult at the same time. And it was only, I think, the fifth or the sixth time I went out, I managed to do it. And it's such a relief that first time you do it, because you realize how easy it is once you get over that first hurdle, right? Do you
It
get
isn't.
that a
It
lot
isn't.
with
I
your
mean,
clients?
I think what I love about it is it keeps you humble. So it's very much about frequency with this stuff. And you know, even someone like me who's done it for 10 years pretty consistently, if I go a few weeks without approaching, I feel that anxiety back. You know, the really hardcore kind of restrictive anxiety. So we are what we do repeatedly, right? So, and especially with cold approach, I see that that cold approach muscle close very fast. Especially with the, you're not going to forget what you're doing to a degree, but you're going to forget the, you're going to, that social freedom element closes down. And again, most guys we teach, including myself, from an introverted background with social anxiety, a lot of guys share that in common that we teach. It's really important they keep this as a something that they're permanently doing, and not just with the approaching, just bantering with people, having fun with people, always flexing that ability to be a bit more social, because that's going to keep you warmed up over periods of time. Because eventually you just want to shift into this, basically more of an omnivore, where you can turn on the extroversion if you need to, but you can also be, you can just chill in your natural default state of introversion if you need to as well. I'm not saying at home you should be sitting there cracking jokes in the mirror, making yourself laugh all day. That's odd. You can just sit there and chill out. But I think what we need to do is we need to think about what is this idealized social image of ourselves we want to propagate when we're out and about, and step into the shoes of that, a bit like an alter ego. And eventually, you do that enough times, you start to become that, or you start to encompass that naturally. And it is acting to a degree to begin with, but it's acting as your idealized self. Just because you are a certain way, that doesn't mean that should be the status quo. That's often a maladaptive version of yourself, which has been developed through trauma or insecurity or whatever. And you're like, oh, well, you know, that's not me to do something like different, like cold approach or be extroverted. No, that's just not the version of you, the idealized version of you you've ever experienced. But you should really, guys should really try and think about this. And that it's a bit existential, but they should really map out what does that idealized version of Sabir or James look like, and then actually start encompassing the traits of that character. And eventually you just start to become that person. That's not being fake. That's just being that self-development on a micro level and constantly reminding yourself of actually what you want in life. That is the hero's journey. So anyone that tells you, just be yourself, bro, if just being yourself, bro, is not getting you results in dating, just being yourself, bro, isn't fucking working. So you need to do something different. And again, that's why having a coach is good, because we can see objectively, we're not emotionally invested, right? Ego investment, emotional investment clouds the vision. It's very hard to introspect on this stuff. It's so personal. And that's why having objective view, but feedback from a coach is amazing, because we can actually see everything you're not seeing, right?
For sure. No, it's absolutely right, because I've actually seen that in practice in your videos. Because a few years ago, you showcased, I think, two or three or maybe more individual clients, and you made a whole collection of their journey of you being with them on the streets of London and other parts of the world. And it's so cool how the camera guy just follows you and your client, and you get to see a real insight into everything that your client goes through. And having you by their side, like even physically, you can see if they're feeling a bit nervous for an approach, you're there to support them and say, go on, just do it, just do it. And visually, you can see how impactful it is. Actually, something comes to mind. There was this Indian chap, I think Bav his name was.
Yeah, which is
Bav.
definitely mispronounced. I think is pronounced
Okay.
like Parv,
Oh, the
but we were
Bav.
I'm just calling him, I think Parv. It's spelled BHAV, but we just called him Bav, and then he was too
Oh,
shy
I
to correct us
see.
until like the first week, and then it was just like,
Okay.
fuck it, well, you're Bav now, you didn't correct me. And he's like, okay, I'm Bav, and
Yeah,
everyone calls him Bav, the people's
that
hero,
story.
Bav, the
Yeah, that
people's
story
hero.
was really intriguing. I was intrigued by that relationship between you and Bav. And I remember one video, you were in central London by, I think, Tower Bridge or somewhere. And there was this underground part of the bridge where you could go, and he saw a girl he liked. She went underground and he came back and he said to you, oh, she disappeared. But you forced him and said, no, she's only gone downstairs. Go and chase her. And it ended up being a really strong conversation. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, it was amazing content to get on camera, because
Yeah.
there were so many naysayers for that series, you know, because there's this whole narrative around Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi guys.
Yeah.
They obviously, you know, it's the standard thing, right? They all don't like women from their own countries and cultures, but they're all obsessed with blonde-haired, blue-eyed girls, right? So that was his
Sure.
kryptonite. And there's this narrative that amongst, not even amongst, you know, people from other ethnicities, but I think amongst that population of people in the UK, that actually, yeah, it's legit. You can't get, you know, white girls or whatever. And he kind of made the mistake of telling me that earlier on in the series. So I was like, okay, well, clearly this is like a red, you know, like fucking cannon, you know, red flag to a bull, right? All I'm going to do now is deliberately send him into, Yeah, because it's the old Joseph Campbell thing, right? Yeah, cave you fear to enter, holes the treasure you seek. So, right, what's the thing that scares him? But it was also going to be most rewarding, that those type of women. And he stopped that girl. I remember, I don't work with a cameraman anymore, but kudos to him. He was really good at what he did, and he was always kind of following the guys and go to any length to do it. So he was filming and got that on camera. And then yeah, we set up a date, and then he went on a date, and you could see, it was going well, and he kind of converted the girl. And guys couldn't compute that. There were so many guys being like, that's fake, all this kind of narrative, because they didn't want it to like fuck with their narrative that it wasn't possible. They had this narrative that Bav, he hadn't had much sexual experience, he hadn't kissed a girl before, he hadn't gone on a date. There's no way this is going to work, right? But we proved through that series, absolutely it could. And then there's guys would always come up with the nuances. Oh well, yeah, but he's like Bollywood good looking. He's like, no, he's all right, but he's not like fucking. He's not that good looking. He wasn't particularly tall. He was probably the same height as Les. So I'm around 6'1". Les is who I work with is about 5'7", 5'8". Bav was around that height, so he and he wasn't putting he wasn't wearing boots or anything to boost his height, and he was looked at. Let's be honest, a reasonably good looking guy. I'm not going to say no to that, but he didn't have much money. He's a student. He's not a great age for a guy, 23, and he's not particularly tall, and he was quite shy. So you've got all these things working against him, and yet you can still see the power of actually manning up and doing the approach and taking the action. The point you made probably wasn't related to that, but I thought it was worth interjecting with that.
No, it's okay. I just felt that that particular clip really epitomized everything that you're about in terms of encouraging guys to go for women that they find really attractive.
Well, it's also
Because
a thing
you,
about living authentically as well. Like one of the key pillars I try to tenets I try to live by is trying to be authentic, right? And I know for me it's an important thing. So I know that I can kind of pick up when a client's bullshitting themselves, or that I know what's up, they're just nervous, right? And so if he genuinely didn't like that girl, I would have let it go. But because I knew he's doing that, he's acting that way out of fear, and that there's that great quote from the movie Dune, that kind of spiel about fear. Fear is the mind killer, and it goes on. But it's true. It's like, okay, I know that's his dream girl. I know he's shitting himself, and that's where he's paying me actually to help him step up. That's really what he's paying me for. Those split second moments where there's no way he's going to do that on his own. But when I was with him, I saw it and I was like, he's not getting out of this. And then lo and behold, the conversation goes well and he ends up on a fucking date with her and seduces her. So you can just see the power of those micro moments and like that decision to take the hero version of yourself journey or the loser version. Right. And those micro moments just make up our lives and they completely change. You change the angle of a flight from New York to London 1 degrees. And with that tiny micro change, it ends up in fucking Mexico. Right. That 1 degree turn. So it's those split second moments in life. Those things that maybe in hindsight don't seem meaningful, that actually are the most meaningful. And that was a pivoting point for him, because then after that he went right 3 or 4 dates, like a week and a half. So I think it was a mindset shift for him as well in terms of confidence that shit, this shit's actually real. I can go on a date with a hot white girl. Okay, right. What's up? What's next? So yeah, a few people have. It's not just you that noticed that moment. A few people have kind of commented on that as like one of these pivotal moments. There was a similar one to the very first transformation we filmed was a guy called Alex who was a virgin from Portugal, very depressed dude. Was making jokes about like killing himself before we met, which I was a bit like, oh, this is, toeing the line. Cause there's probably about 4 guys I know who have taken their own lives. I was somewhat close to some of them, some less so, but still suicide is a very damaging thing, obviously. And so he's kind of cracking these kind of jokes and we're just like thinking, fucking hell, I hope he's not going to do something stupid. But yeah, he turned up to London. You can see in the early videos, really depressed, just head down. Hates everything, hates himself, constant negative self-talk. And there was that crazy moment coming towards the end of the week. It had some like it obviously stepped into his own kind of shoes and confidence a bit more and was building himself up. But it was this crazy moment where he sees this like girl walk past. I could see that was his type. And it was the second last day he was in London. And we were like, he sees her and then just turns around and I think he held himself to account. He's like, I've got to fucking speak to her. And he charges back around. And Sopsa, and the great irony is she's from where he's from, which is Portugal. He's the only Portuguese girl he's met in London. But they hit it off, and she's only in town for a day. And then we're planning the date, and we're just thinking, fuck, this would be amazing if he can actually get laid and lose his virginity, because it's just amazing for the content as well. And it's so poetic the way it's all set up. And then we're like, so Alex, okay, so put it, obviously set up the date in a pub near your hotel room. What hotel are you staying in? And he was like, and he gave me the name, and I was like, hold on, that rings a bell. And I've Googled it, and it's a really like terrible, it's probably the lowest quality hostel you can stay in London. And then lo and behold, he's staying with 16 people in his room. I was just like, fuck's sake, this is a recipe for disaster. So I was like, I did the unthinkable, and I just said, look, because I really wanted him to get a result. And I was like, just use my flat, use my, I lived with two people at the time, but just use my room. So we ended up setting up the date in a coffee shop opposite my house in London Bridge. And then we got him, I think, to take her to down the road to the gin bar that I've had many, many dates over the years in. And then he took her home, and it went down. And that was another one where you just like these tiny moments just changed the course of this guy's life, right? And I still speak to both of these guys, and they're living totally different realities now, And would I attribute the work I did with them to that? I'd like to think that actually, to be honest, if it hadn't been me, they'd have probably found someone else they vibed with and cracked on with, and probably would have ended up in the same place. It was just very cool to see people's journeys. I mean, I think I heard this on one of the content producers I follow, Unplugged Alpha, Rich Cooper. He got a question from a caller, and the caller was like, how do I set up a business? And Rich Cooper was like, I can't remember what it was, but it was something like, exactly, it was something like, combine something you're good at with a passion and something that's valuable to society, right? And if you can kind of overlap those three things, and you've got like in the middle, like the thing, then you can be successful. And I think kind of accidentally I did that. Like I've always enjoyed helping people, and obviously passion for traveling around and meeting people and doing stuff on my own terms, I think. And obviously tying anything to an anti-fragile industry, death, big pharma, sleep, taxes, sex. You're always in business if you pick one of those categories, right? And yeah, I think really, I mean, I've been lucky in a way to work with guys like Bav and Alex, and kind of showcase what happened, because it's great content to watch as well. I never tend to watch my videos because I get enough just from producing them, and I'm not one to kind of go back over old content. I just find it boring, again, short attention span. But I know I do the job not for validation. I do it because I know there's people are going to take stuff, and it's going to help them. And the biggest compliment I can have is guys will come up to me randomly in the street in really random places sometimes, which is quite cool to get recognized. And like, it was in like Santiago Airport changing over, and the guy who was working in the lounge was like, man, I watched your videos, you helped me get a girlfriend. I was like, man, that's sick. He was like, free champagne for you. And I was like, no man, it's like 9 a.m. I don't want any, but thank you for the offer. And I had to really like turn it down, because I really didn't want I don't like champagne anyway, especially at 9 in the morning when I'm hungover already. None of that hair of the dog, unless it's a Bloody Mary. But just instances like that, it's nothing to do with the validation of putting out content. I actively do not tell anyone what I do, male or female, that I meet, unless I see them as a potential client. Men, I want them to just see if I vibe with them, as guys I could potentially travel with and have fun with them. Women, they play all sorts of games if they know what you do. They're natural detectives, right? So often if I'm dating a girl for any period of time, she's going to find out. And at some stage, if I like her enough and there's enough investment, I'll tell her what I do, but I'll frame it in a particular way. But I used to think it was cool to tell women what I did, and I swiftly realized actually it's just a surefire way to get a barrage of shit tests on a date and not get laid. So I've stopped with all that kind of idea. But for me, yeah, the biggest kind of warm vibes I get is when a guy comes up to me, and not that I watch your content, but I've watched your content and I've used bits, and this what happened is something positive happening, right? That gives me real kind of satisfaction for what I do. So it's always been the angle of like, I put out content based on the struggles I'm having, and I'm trying to help my former self, right? And by default of doing that, I'm going to be helping people in a similar position. And yeah, I find it, I love what I do, but I also, like we talked about at the beginning, if you are thinking about putting out some content creation stuff and it is a bit left field, expect to have a lot of naysayers. And I have done, and I've lost friends over it. And I've lived a very particular, unusual lifestyle. And with this kind of nomadic traveling existence I do live, there are definitely, there's been amazing upsides. I love it, but there's also been a lot of downsides, right? So it's not smooth sailing. But if you believe strongly enough in what you're doing, it's that kind of Nietzsche-esque thing of you overcome the what and the how and you get on with it. So
Yeah. Would you
it's
mind
been a cool ride.
would you mind sharing what those downsides could be if you're living that kind of life? Because it's something I've been considering over the last few months, especially with my work being remote. So I work from home and I could potentially work from anywhere. So it'd be really interesting to get a perspective from you as someone who's done it. What would
Yeah,
be
I
the
mean, I've done it in a
downsides?
very unusual way. And again, now backwards reverse engineering, myself, again, extremely high levels of ADD and shiny object syndrome and always wanting something new has meant I've kind of gone on this crazy journey of adventure where I spend 2, 3 weeks in a place and move on. I've done that for 6 years. So a very unusual existence. I don't know anyone that's kind of lived that kind of a lifestyle. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend that. That works for me and it has served its purpose, but it's not for everyone at all. It's very unusual.
No, thanks for
The
sharing that.
downside of the downsides of leaving London and just trying nomadic living zero, because the worst case scenario is you go and do it for a bit and you don't enjoy it and you just go back to the UK. There's no the only risk you don't you you the most unsafe thing you can do in life is play it safe, because we're all dead men walking. We're all going out in a box or incineration in the not too distant future. The things you don't do are the things you regret in life. Because if you don't do something and it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter. You just pick yourself up, dust yourself off and go again. Failure is never a permanent state. It's just you win or you learn. So there's no downside. If it's something you've been mulling over for months, it means you should have done it months ago. This isn't to say you should be doing it. I'm just saying generalize if people are thinking about traveling. Yeah, just the stuff that you think about that your brain goes to and you waste a lot of time worrying about, just do it. Just do that thing. There's a great motivational video, kind of a piss take video from Shia LaBeouf from Transformers, who when Transformers first came out and everyone was like, oh, there's that really hot girl. She must be called Shia LaBeouf because no one knew Megan Fox's name. They're like, oh yeah, that really hot girl, Shia LaBeouf. It was like, no, that's actually the dude. But he put out this kind of piss take video where he's like screaming, just going like, just do it. And the point of that video was obviously a piss take. He seems like a bit of a joker, a bit of a kind of eccentric character. But yeah, how often do we spend worrying about bullshit, hypothetical scenarios when we could actually just fucking do the thing and then see what the outcome is, rather than just in our mind, we create a thousand reasons about these kind of worst case scenarios and this doom and gloom. And it's never as bad. It's always worse in our imagination than it is in reality, whatever you're worrying about. Right? And especially if you're an overthinker, it can be quite damaging, I think, just to sit there and like really stress about things that haven't even happened and these like hypotheticals. It's such a waste of energy, right? Whereas the energy, if you channel it towards actually doing the thing and trying to do that thing to the best of your ability, whether it's traveling or setting up a business or whatever, you wouldn't even have time to worry about this bollocks, because the energy is channeled the right way. It has to go somewhere. So better to channel it towards action than worry.
No, very wise words. And it's really interesting that your work actually encompasses so many different types of learnings. It's like your work has kind of morphed into so many different things that when put together work so nicely for what you do. And it's really nice to hear. Now, James, I'm very conscious of your time. I know you're a very busy guy. There was just one more thing I wanted to touch base on, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, we've been speaking. You've got hundreds of videos in your YouTube channel showing you approach women, working with your clients. And one of the things I picked up on in many of your videos, sorry, is how a lot of women actually admire men who have the confidence to approach. There's very few women in your videos who categorically ignore the guy or say no. There are a few, but on the whole, they're quite welcoming of the approach. But then on the flip side, you also talk about how men's biggest enemy is making the approach due to fear of rejection. So
Yeah,
considering that.
I think we create our own barriers most of the time. It's never the women, or the women don't change, the streets don't change, the locations don't change. It's how we view it, right? And we're our own worst enemy in a lot of this. 100%.
Yeah.
What was the exact
So yeah,
question you were
just the
going to ask?
question was, so considering a lot of women are open to cold approaches, they're not going to shut you off completely. How can we as men, in your opinion, begin to navigate away from this fear of rejection? If there was one kind of tip that you could give as a starting point, what would that be?
Well, it'd be the exact opposite, which is embrace rejection. Embrace it. There's probably three kind of linchpin things guys need to get good at to get good at this stuff. And it's embracing rejection,
Yeah.
running headfirst into it, don't avoid it, because we're playing a game of inherent losses, right? So good stats from this. I always talk about 1 in 30. If I approach three girls, I expect a phone number from one of them, as a minimum. And 10 phone numbers, I'll go on 2 dates, so 1 in 5 ratio, and I'll sleep with one out of those 2 dates. So between it, stats vary. If I go to Thailand, they'll be higher. I can get away with more. Or if I'm in a singles person's party like Rio Carnival, I'm probably gonna have better stats than that. But these are general stats that, would apply to most places, and they're comparable to other guys I know in this industry who approach. That means 29 times out of 30, if we take the 1 in 30 example, it doesn't work. But it doesn't go anywhere if we're saying the goal is you have to fuck the girl, right? So this is why the focus should be on the process of learning to become socially free, learning to banter, learning to tease, and enjoying that process. Treat it like a game, treat it as self-investment. And there's a side effect to that. You'll get results. But if your sole focus is on I have to fuck the girl or it's a failure, you're gonna have a very, very torrid time with learning this stuff, because we're playing a game of inherent losses. So embrace rejection. It's part of the game. It's part of the game. Whatever dating methodology you use, whether you do online swiping, or whether you do cold approach, or whether you do nightclub game, or whatever, you're not getting every girl. I don't care how high value the dude is, he's not getting every girl, right? There's some circumstance, you've got these super alpha celebrities, right? They're gonna obviously have a higher hit rate, but they can't sleep with every girl they approach, or they are interested, because the girl is sometimes just unavailable. She's happily married. She's happily with a boyfriend. You look like the ex-boyfriend. It doesn't matter how high value you are. So I think embracing rejection, there's a phase of this of really guys taking it to heart when they start approaching, because they realize actually how many women aren't interested in them. And that's where it really pays to work on the other areas of your life and the kind of what they call inner game. Because if you haven't got that sorted out, you're going to have a very, and you've got low self-esteem and a low self-image of yourself anyway, and you're getting a ton of rejection, no success. It's going to really fuck with your head. And again, this is why you should get a coach, because they're able to kind of spell this process out to you. So it keeps you sane, because you're like, oh, it's not just me. That's normal. The issue I had with a lot of the pickup content when I got into the industry was no one told me. Everyone had this fake American marketing of like the three tricks to get any girl into bed. If you use our course, you're going to be sleeping with 10 supermodels a week. I was going on dates with three or four women a week and sleeping with probably two. And that's really good, right? By any standards. And yet I felt like a failure, because the marketing I saw made it out that I should have eight girls in my bed that week. And that really messed me up. And no one told me, right? So that's why the folks of the channel and the folks of the content me and Les put out, and the other guys, is about the authenticity of the fact you get a fuckload of rejection. I am a decent looking guy. I've built my value up. I'm consciously aware of what I'm doing. And I still get rejected a fuck ton, right? And it's no coincidence that the most popular videos on my channel are the rejection reels, because people want to watch the world burn. But it's also realistic, because that's the reality of what's happening. Most women I approach, it doesn't go anywhere. I've
Yeah.
been on hundreds of dates, thousands of dates, and I haven't got laid. It's the Michael Jordan thing. He's the most successful basketball player of all time, but he talks about all the losses. Colonel Sanders, the guy that set up KFC, his recipe got turned down 1,000 times before he succeeded at the age of 71. 1,000 times he went into place and they just said, no, get out. 1,000 times, right? And guys, we live in such a fucking soft world that guys will, oh, I did one approach, doesn't work. It's this mentality that I resent, and I try and constantly cultivate in myself, of one of the values I live by is challenge myself on a micro and a macro level every day. Can I be better? Because I hate, and I've come from this position of needing to learn this stuff, but I hate how soft men are in the Anglosphere, in particular by the Anglosphere, I mean the UK, US, or Australia and Canada. It's just this victim, doomer, black pill mentality. We're so lucky. We live in the richest, most abundant age, where the you know, most of the guys that are commenting on the black pill channels are reasonably good looking kids with parents' money, with no issues in life, and yet they're going online going, oh, it's over. It's like, fuck off. And that, you know, me and Troy, who I collaborate with, we have this collaboration with a guy called Wheat Waffles, who we collab with. He's obviously a successful guy, but I don't like, you know, his message is actually softening up and becoming a bit more red pill and self-developmenty. But, you know, we said to him, look, a few times, look, bro, you know, you're 19, you're 20. A lot of these 17, 16-year-old guys who are not in their prime yet, and it's going to be 20 years till they're in their prime, they're not, obviously not getting results with girls. They don't know what they're up to. You're the figurehead for these guys. If you tell them it's over, you know, without kind of dooming and glooming it, you've got potential blood on your hands, right? So you've got to be very careful. I think people need to be very careful with the content they consume, and any content that tells you it's over, you know, go and, you know, if you're a black pill dude living in the UK watching this, go and, you think it's over, some girl didn't reply to your message. Go fly to Ukraine and help out on the Ukrainian-Russian front as an 18-year-old. Go and help some 18-year-old Ukrainian. Go and step into his shoes where he's been called up to the front line against a Russian fucking tank, right? And see how life really fucking is. So I hate this softness that's propagated throughout. And it's not our fault. We're just born in a, you know, good times make soft men. We're born in a weak time, right? So we lose that edge. And we have to, I think part of the reason I love Cold Approach and I got into this, and I wanted to keep it as part of my life, was it helps you on a micro level maintain an edge. Because it doesn't matter how hot the girl is you slept with the night before, you go out and you're back on the streets again and you get blown out by a couple of girls and you're humbled again, right? And it's a way of forcing yourself into discomfort every day on a micro level. And it's that anti-fragility, right? That post-traumatic growth. People talk a lot about post-traumatic stress. It's been well documented, and I don't know why it's not talked about more, but micro trauma, if it's dealt with in the right way, a bit like going to the gym and building your muscles bigger, it causes growth, right? Post-traumatic growth. There's a really good description of this in a book called High Risk. It's this SAS guy who went rogue and kind of went on all these crazy adventures. Got a guy called Ben Timberlake, and he talks about it a lot. But it's a very real concept. So I think desensitization through repetition. Embrace rejection. Go out, throw yourself into the lion's den, and realize, like, when you've done that 50 or 100 times, whatever the outcome, it's not that big a deal anymore, right? You adapt. So embrace rejection is one of the big things. And then getting comfortable with sexuality. And I think there's a lot of, as guys, there's a lot of, it could be nature, it could be nurture. It's a lot of sexual shame with men that we carry and we don't realize, right? And you've got to really deal with that stuff. It's stuff I've dealt with and in a process of continuing to deal with. But there's a lot of, I think men, we often have a lot of hang-ups around sex. And so shutting that stuff away, actually need to kind of open that box and work on that stuff. So getting really comfortable being a sexual being, on a self level, and then accepting that women are also very sexual. And for a lot of guys, that makes them very uncomfortable, either the self or the other or both. So addressing that, and then in line with accepting that and embracing that and working on that, you can then flirt and banter very effectively because you're doing the playful stuff, but you're actually able to put across sexual intent, which for a lot of guys is quite uncomfortable to learn to do as well. Again, it's being vulnerable. You're putting yourself on the line and exposing yourself to rejection. Really, it all comes down to rejection and being comfortable with people saying no to you. And if you come from that nice guy background and people-pleasing background that most of us come from, that is a lifelong battle to work on. And just being consciously aware and introspecting on this stuff, you're able to then pick it apart. But again, it's a very laborious and time-consuming and lengthy process that most guys are not prepared to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you delving deep.
I look like I've ruined your life, the bear. You're just like, oh no.
No, it's
a labor. He's told me all this stuff. I've got to go and do this now, for fuck's sake. I expect it. As usual, I've done the Riddler routine of left more questions than answers. But really, that's how life should be. We don't have all the answers. And the more you think you know stuff, the more you realize you don't know shit. And it's something that I deal with every day. So it's what it is.
Yeah, no, please don't apologize. As I said earlier, these type of conversations end up being the most interesting when it does go off script. And I think it happens when the guest is immensely passionate and has deep knowledge about what they do. And that's certainly come through today. Jane, before I wrap up and remind everyone of how they can follow your work, were there any final words that you wanted to say, perhaps something that I've missed out in the questions? Please feel free to do so.
Yeah, I think guys should figure out what they really truly want from this short time we're conscious. It sounds very existential, but I've very much dived into the more psychedelic stuff in the last kind of year or so. So I smoke this stuff called Bufo. It's DMT 5-MeO. It's a very similar to ayahuasca, but the mechanism of delivery is smoking it.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not like ayahuasca where you're fucked for 10 hours and you're going in the jungle and you're chanting, hippie formation for a week. It's very much go in with the shame and 1-on-1, 20 minutes and out you come. But it was life-changing, just in terms of perspective on life and realizing how beautiful life is, but also how we waste it and we take it for granted. And I think you owe yourself, whoever you are, the standard attributed to being alive, which is to live that best version of yourself. And it sounds like a cliche thing, but really sitting down and thinking, right, if I had no external validation need here, if I had no external input, people telling me what I can and can't do, what would my life really look like, right? And
Yeah.
that's a very painful process for a lot of guys, because I think a lot of guys, including me, for vast periods of my life, have lived lives we're not happy with. And it's that kind of quiet life of desperation, plodding along, pretending it's all good to everyone else. Oh yeah, how are you? Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Oh, how's that accounting job you're doing? Yeah, really good. It's not that. Your parents have told you to do that, or you just didn't have the balls to decide what you really wanted to do. So you just did the status quo thing. But what ends up happening is eventually you end up a broken soul, because you slowly grind yourself down internally, because you're not living authentically and passionately to what you actually believe in. So whilst I get a lot of flak for what I do, and whilst I constantly struggle with the need to sometimes justify what I do to other people, even though that's a work in progress. And again, being consciously aware of something means you can work on it. I'm so much more overall happier now than I ever was when I was in London, because I was living a life that was this disingenuous to myself. And at the end of the day, when you're lying there in 30, 40, 50 years, and life is then the light is fading out, hopefully you're surrounded by, loved ones, friends, and family, you're just going to be thinking about the things you didn't do, or the bullshit fabrication of a life you formed to please other people who never gave a shit, rather than what you should have done. So I say two-fingered salute to, whatever fucking people think of you. Figure out what it is you want to do in life and go and do it. And fuck everyone that, fuck all the naysayers, just do it anyway. And that those things might change. And again, that's why I said, what started out as me kind of, this is my thing, the message has morphed with the advice I'm giving out as I develop as a human being, as I take on other things. And it'll probably still will morph again. And in 10 years, probably the stuff I'll be saying will be completely different, or at least reasonably different to the stuff I'm saying now. But that's the only advice I could give to guys who are watching this that are younger, or listening to this who are younger, is don't be afraid to do something different, right? You live one life. One in 400 trillion is the odds of being born you, according to scientists, jokingly calculated, but somewhat accurately. Are you really doing yourself? Are you really living with those numbers in mind? One in 400 trillion. Is this really the best you could do? Is the question I would pose for guys to pose to themselves, and then have some hard chats with themselves about what they really want. And that would be the
Yeah.
main thing I'd end on, is trying to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating way to end the conversation. James, I just
Again,
wanted
leaving more
to.
questions than answers, probably, but that
No,
hopefully. If one or two guys change their life for the better because of the stuff I've spouted out in a slightly hungover version of myself, then, so be it. Good.
No, honestly, you've actually gone above and beyond. You haven't just answered the questions, but you've done so much more. And I really appreciate it. And James, I just want to take this opportunity just to say to you, or for you to know how impactful your work really is. I know you have lots of people, as you said, coming up to you on the street, giving you good feedback.
Well, I have the occasional person. It's not. I mean, if I go to Oxford Street, where it's like kind of the day gamers' paradise, or hell, however you term it, I will get recognised quite a lot. But no, not I'm by no means that big a name. But I always appreciate when people come up to me, because it always happens to be really random places. I'm like, oh, that's so random.
No, of course. And as I
But
said
no,
to you at the
any
beginning,
feedback, I'm glad to hear that you said
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that you've watched the content I've put out for the last few years, but I'm more glad when you actually said, I use that content to go and change my life and make it better, right?
For
Because that's
sure.
really
Yeah.
what I care about, not fanboys that just, you know, sit there with the proverbial popcorn. It's guys that actually use what we put out and go and change their lives. That's really the modus operandi for myself and Les and the guys we work with. We genuinely like to hear that.
Yeah. No, for sure. It certainly helped. As I said at the beginning of the conversation, it took me a long time. It wasn't straight away, but the more I consumed your content, it helped a lot more. And that process of getting out only happened very recently. So it took me a good 2 2.5 years to actually take the plunge. So
You know
yeah,
what?
just
That's better
you.
than nothing. Even if it
Yeah.
took you 2 years, even if it took you 5 years. I mean, again, this is why I recommend doing coaching because you watch the content,
Yeah.
and not you necessarily, but people, and then they're like,
Sure.
"Oh, I could just try and, you know, waste my time thinking I'm doing more, or I could just pay someone because time is more valuable than money, and it's an
Yeah.
infinite resource as opposed to a finite resource, and do it." But
Yeah.
the fact is, even if you did watch stuff for 2 years, then you went and did stuff. That's still amazing, you know.
Yeah. No, and it was a great experience doing it. But as you said, it does become a problem when you do one approach and then you don't do it for a long time. That's what I'm working on now, is trying not to leave long gaps, because as you said, it doesn't work because you spiral back into your old habits and routines and thinking patterns. And that's what happened to me after I did the first one. I became lazy and I started coming back. So yeah, definitely still a lot more work to do, but I'm sure with your support, your team support on your YouTube channel, I'm sure that will help a great deal. James, it's been an absolute pleasure. I said this to you before, but I'll say it again. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know we've tried to do this for a long time. You're super busy, but I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, it's been some interesting stuff that I've kind of come out with. I never really planned stuff, and
Yeah.
I tend to spout out what I'm actually feeling at the time. And yeah, maybe this one was a bit more existential than the, you know, maybe guys listening to would want, but it's what's genuinely on my mind at the moment, and so I guess then it's relevant. And look, I
Yeah.
think it's the next stage of this stuff as well. When you have gone into this and you've dated a lot and you've realized, actually, it was never about the women. Game is a Trojan horse to self-development, said Tom Torero once, which is very accurate. It frees you up to think, right, what next? And I'd say I'm in that stage now where obviously I'll still date. Dating and connection is still important to me, but it's not the modus operandi it once was. And
Yeah.
it's like, what else is out there? What bigger fish are there to fry? So for me, on a personal level, definitely be going down more of that spiritual path and figuring stuff out with respect to that, which is going to be it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. And from the bottom of my heart, I wish you the very best with that journey. Continue doing what you're doing, impacting lots of people. And I hope you continue to travel around the world with your work and enjoy all the countries that you visit. So, yeah, thank you
And we'll
again.
stay in touch, I'm sure. And yeah, maybe we can do a part two at some stage as well.
Yeah,
When
no,
I'm a
absolutely.
wigged out hippie, you know, meditating on a mountain with a long beard, come back and
100%. I'll be super up for that for a round two at some point. So James, thank you once again. For everybody who's watching and listening, just before we wrap up, just to remind everybody of how to follow James Tusk online. Let me remind you of how to spell the name first in case you search for it on Google or anywhere else. So it's James Tusk, JamesTusk. His website, which is jamestusk.com. On YouTube, which we talked a lot about, you can follow James there using the handle at James Tusk. Or if you just type in James Tusk on YouTube, his material will pop straight up. And on Twitter, at James Tusk as well. And as always, I'll include all of James's social media links in both the YouTube and the audio podcast description. For everybody who's watching and listening, thank you so much for tuning in to this very special episode of the Sabir Bharti Show with our special guest, James Tusk. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have. Until next time, do take care of yourself. Have a blessed day. Bye bye.